T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Mully and Hall. Live and local, Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
With the 13th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Los Angeles Chargers select Rashawn Slater Jr., tackle, Northwestern.
With the 26th pick for the 2021 NFL Draft for the Cleveland Browns, we have Gregory Newsome II.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. A glorious and wondrous day for the Northwestern Wildcats, having two players go early. You got the number 13 pick there in Rashawn Slater going to the Chargers, nice part of the country. And Greg Newsome, the second, going to the Browns, not so nice a part of the country, but popular pick because it was the hometown at number 26. They could be a pretty decent team.
And a good team. Young team.
Both those teams are good teams.
Yeah, absolutely. Both guys land in good spots for them in terms of their development and teams that could be playoff contenders immediately.
And you could see Pat Fitzgerald there. At the draft, it was fun to see Coach Fitz smiling, and we are delighted to welcome in to the hotline, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. He is the Northwestern head coach, Pat Fitzgerald. Fitz, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Coach.
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, guys. I'm not as good as Rashawn and Greg, but I'm not too shabby. So ecstatic for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, you looked like you were kind of the proud papa. I mean, you had this smile on your face. It was great to see you kind of relaxed and not worked up on the sideline. You could just enjoy the glory that your guys enjoyed. It was wonderful, Fitz.
Well, you're really thankful for Rashawn and his family. You know, giving myself and Kurt Anderson, our great O-line coach, the opportunity to be there. You know, with the family and with Rashawn and just the hype building up to it. The NFL does a phenomenal job. And, you know, I told my boys at dinner a week before the draft, you know, we're at dinner and, you know, I look at Jack Ryan and Brennan and I'm like, hey, guys, just want to let you know Rashawn and his family invited me to go to the draft with them. And they're like, oh, that's so awesome, Dad. And my middle son Ryan's like, hey, Dad, that's really cool. You get to go to the draft finally. You weren't good enough as a player, so we get to go as a coach.
That's great.
Tough out, man. Tough out. Yeah.
So Fitz, you're there and you're waiting, and both guys had different parts of the first round. Teams kind of interested in even either moving up to get Slater in some cases, and maybe, you know, Greg Newsome was a guy at the end of the first round. A lot of maneuvering. Did you sense any of that going on with the Slater's family? Did you sense any of that anxiety that was there? How would you describe it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and Rashawn, I thought, put himself in position to be the number one tackle taken off the board. And, you know, when the Bengals, who everything pre-draft said were going to take a tackle, did not go on a tackle, it went, okay, where is this thing going to go? And then based on my conversations, you knew that down the road that Rashawn was going to be picked. I did not think he would go past the Chargers. And then when it all worked itself out, when the Bears traded up, before I saw what they gave up in the trade, I was like, in my mind, I was like, uh-oh, this could be something special. And then I saw they gave up a first-round pick, and I looked over at Reggie Slater, Rashawn's dad, and I said, they're taking a quarterback. So, it just all worked itself out. But, yeah, especially the 7 minutes kind of leading into his pick, all of a sudden now here come the cameras from NFL Network kind of around the little living room that they had created for the players. You could sense something was about to happen, and that was just an amazing moment.
Ernest Brown the IV got drafted as well, and then you had a bunch, and that was the fifth round. That's a pretty good spot for him with the Rams. And then you had seven players, Patty Fisher and Peyton Ramsey, both joining the Carolina Panthers. J.R. Pace and John Rain are headed to Atlanta. Blake Gallagher is bound for the Ravens. Riley Lees, and he's going to Cincy. And, of course, Gunnar Vogel is staying here with the Bears. So I'm sure that's pretty thrilling to have that many guys heading into NFL camps and certainly some really good players with some really good opportunities there.
Yeah, well, we'll start with Ernie Brown. Just ecstatic for him and his family. It's a great fit. They're looking for a really heavy-handed defensive end and a guy with a really good motor, and that's Ernie, and he's in a great situation out there with the Rams, and fired up to see those three guys drafted with him and Greg and Rashawn. But we got some great news yesterday. Ramadh Chokio Bowman is going to get an opportunity to go down to Indianapolis this week. So we had 11 guys at Pro Day workout to get their opportunity, and all 11 guys walk out of draft weekend with an opportunity. I think that's the first time that's happened in our program's history. So,
you can have it all
here, guys. We got a top 10 rated academic experience, a top 10 football team, and now to be developing these guys and helping them. Obviously, the credit goes to them, but putting everything around them from a developmental standpoint to be prepared for the NFL, and then do it at the highest level with being drafted in the first round. What are you recruits waiting for? You could have it all here. Come on, let's go. Run out of scholarships. So, it's a great time to be a Wildcat, and we couldn't be more excited.
Congrats, Fitz. That's great for the program. And, it's also, you mentioned, by the way, the Bears got a quarterback and somebody that you're very familiar with. You go back with Justin Fields. I thought it was interesting as he talked on Friday, the last time he had been to Chicago, the only time he said was when he was visiting Northwestern. So I've, been meaning to ask you about that background. Why couldn't you close the deal?
Yeah, right. Okay.
No, but
now you sound David like my kids at dinner. All right, that's all. I'll say, but,
seriously, knowing him as you do, what kind of insight can you lend into the kind of person he is? And that you can see it's obvious, Fitz. He has star quality, and he has got the makeup that he's going to need as an NFL quarterback.
Well, yeah, we got the privilege to get to know he and his family early in the recruiting process, and when he walked into my office, I was like, this young man's a superstar. I've had a handful now that when they walk in, we've had great ones that I've coached, but I've also had some really special ones walk into my office that we ended up not getting, and Justin's one of those. Andrew Luck would be another one, just to name a few, that you get the opportunity to meet and get to know their families and really get to know them, who they are as a person. Forget about the football, and just blown away with Justin, and to see the career he had is second to none. And then I had a lot of people call me because obviously our defense played well against him in the past game in the Big Ten championship, but he got hurt in the first half, and he never used that as an excuse. He did a coach day, and then I said, don't look at that game. That game's an anomaly. Look at how he responded against Clemson. Look at the way he played consistently. As someone that got their tail whipped by him here in 19, he can make all the throws. He's athletic. He can run. He's got escapability. He's led a program at the highest level you can be at, which will, translate to handling the opportunity that he has here. Obviously, he's got to compete with Andy and all the things that go along with that. But, to be the quarterback of the Chicago Bears is a big deal. It's a high-profile position in sports in our country. There's high expectations. And, as a fan first, we want to get back to where we were in 1985. And We've been really close, and the, you know, it's no secret to any of us Bear fans. We need to get consistency at the quarterback play, and my hopes and prayers are that it all works out for Justin, and especially for Matt and for Ryan, because those guys are, you know, as I know, being in the foxhole here in my place, you're trying, like, you know what, to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, and it takes great talent. It takes, you know, coaches putting people in the right position. It takes a lot of luck, and, you know, everything aligned itself the right way for Justin, and hope he has a great career. And I'm ecstatic. I do not have to coach against him again here at Northwestern. So it's win all around.
You know, you talk about being there, and you knew something big was happening as it unfolded. You know, Fitz, I got to be honest with you. I was stunned that he fell that far. I have watched a ton of Big Ten football, and I understand there are, you know, some Ohio State quarterbacks that haven't had great success at the next level, and there's this kind of talk about that. But when he fell out of the top five, I was surprised. When he fell out of the top 10, I honestly couldn't believe it. I was absolutely stunned. We normally talk about guys being overdrafted at that position. If it's possible, I think he was underdrafted.
Well, we're going to see, right? I mean, this is going to be a really five-year study down the road with these quarterbacks and see how it all plays out, right? I mean, it's usually feast or famine. It ends up, not all the draft class ends up being, you know, first team all pro and a Pro Bowler, and, you know, more importantly, leading their team into the playoffs, into a Super Bowl. So, you know, all he could ask for, like, same thing I told our 11 guys, all you can ask for is an opportunity, and it's what you make of it. The guys on Sunday would not give you an opportunity unless they believed in you. And obviously the Bears believe in Justin, and, you know, who cares what the other 10 teams thought, and especially the other teams that took a quarterback. That's got nothing to do with what he needs to do right here and right now. And that's get ready for rookie minicamp, come in and show out, you know, show up and show out and be him and put a great first impression out there in front of his teammates and the organization. And then the rest of the stuff will take care of it. You know, it takes care of itself. It's playing football. The windows are smaller. The speed is faster, but it's the same width, length, and the uprights and the goalposts are the same. So he's well prepared. He's well coached by Coach Day and his staff. I'm ecstatic to watch it unfold, and I just wish him nothing but the best of luck.
I know you have a good relationship with Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace, Fitz, and it goes beyond just the fact that you've been, you know, you were 10 when the 85 Bears won and you were doing the Super Bowl shuffle. I mean, it's because of, you know, your colleagues and your peers. And so I imagine, you know, when did you talk to them about Justin Fields, and it was before or after the draft, and what kind of things did you tell them?
Yeah, you know, it was just really brief at our pro day. I say brief. It may have been a, you know, 3 or 5 minute conversation, just talking about multiple Big Ten players. You know, from my perspective, all NFL organizations do that. Like I said, I had a number of NFL organizations not only ask me about, you know, my guys, and especially Rashawn and Greg, but, you know, about a lot of Big Ten players, but especially, you know, Justin. And so, you know, I just told him, I said, look beyond our game, you know, because I'm not sure how, you know, readily available it was that he got his, you know, his hand dinged up in the game on a scramble play. That's a question for Ryan and for Matt as they did their evaluation. I'm sure they overturned every stone. But, you know, I thought the kid was getting a bad rap. He had an unbelievable career there. You know, he wins championships. I mean, what more can you ask for from a guy? You know, and you're talking about at Ohio State that, you know, it's Big Ten championship or it was a failure season. And not that we all don't say that in the Big Ten, but, you know, what they have there and the resources that they have is a whole different level than maybe some of us get the opportunity to have. So he's dealt with the high pressure. He's dealt with the high scrutiny and the expectations. And, you know, the good news for Justin is all he needs to do is be himself. And that's good enough. So just fired up. And like I said, I'm sure Matt and Ryan overturned every stone.
You know, it's fascinating, Fitz, because I think that people that just look from the outside don't understand the amount of research these teams do. So they're looking at your guys. I'm talking about all of your guys, and they're putting together all their grades, and you've got scouts that are showing up and think you've got tons of people that are looking for any piece of information. And, you know, just talking to different scouts over the years, they will talk about, you know, the need for honesty from college coaches, not just about their guys, but about other guys they play against, because, you know, you will, they won't want to talk to you if they feel like you're leading them astray. So it's great that you have that kind of an ability to translate what you've done and what you've seen to the different players that are there, because it's a really important sort of relationship for them to understand everything they're seeing. It's something that people don't, I think, on the outside understand how important it is to them.
Yeah, no question, Molly. And well, it's the same thing we deal with in high school. The difference is that, you know, I've got like intern recruiting assistants. You know, the NFL spends millions in scouting, and they still get it wrong. And yeah. You know that if you look at over my time here, you know, going on year 16, you can kind of sense where we go to recruit. And it's not because we don't believe in other areas. It's just because we have great relationships, you know, starting here in Chicagoland with coaches, exactly what you just said. What they say to us ends up being what the young person is. And it's not the football eval. It's the who the person is. What's their values? How are they going to handle adversity? How are they going to handle success? You get to the NFL, you know, how are you going to handle generational wealth? How are you going to handle the fame? You know, what's your support network like when it gets really difficult and challenging and you face adversity, maybe for some of these guys the first time in their life? You know, you want to understand what makes this person tick, because at the end of the day, you get hired on skill and fired on personality. That's the way it works. It doesn't matter what profession you're in, and especially when you're playing a kid's game at the highest level when everyone is an elite athlete. So, listen, I don't sugarcoat it. I tell our players here, like, I'm never going to lie to be able to get you an opportunity, because once my integrity and once my word is gone, they'll never come back. And I think that's why, you know, you look at all the free agents that we have. I mean, NFL organizations want to have our guys in their programs because of who our guys are and how they carry themselves. And we're an open book here. They can come watch us. They watch them work. They watch them practice. And, you know, when you can be honest, you got nothing to hide. So I'm really excited about these 11, where it's a sign of, I think, things to come. We're going to have, I think, somewhere like 28 guys on NFL rosters to start up, you know, camp season here. I think that's the most we've ever had. So, you know, we're building a program that can give you everything you want. And it's going to, I think, always be under construction. You'll never be satisfied, but really proud of these guys. Ecstatic for them. Some have multiple degrees. They're going to walk out of here with graduate degrees, not only Northwestern undergraduate degrees. And they couldn't come from better families. So we're ecstatic that they represent themselves, their families, and our program.
Fitz, I think what you're trying to say is you recovered pretty well after not recruiting Justin Fields.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. You know, we didn't get Andrew Luck. You know who we got? We got Dan Persa. You know what I mean?
Think
about
bad.
How blessed,
yeah.
Think about
nice
how blessed
pivot.
I am.
Nice
yeah,
pivot,
yeah.
Fitz.
Yeah.
Good
you know,
stuff.
So, yeah, that's how it goes. So everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I wonder, I think the Fitzgerald boys will be wearing jersey number one with Fields on the back, cheering them on. So exciting times. We're looking forward to, you know, we got the month of May here to wrap up in school, and guys are wrapping up midterms, and before you know it, it's going to be the end of July, and we're going to be in summer and in training camp. So let's get back. Everybody stay healthy and safe so we can get back to normal. Phillips Soldier Field, Philip Ryan Field, and you know, get this thing back going, because, like I said last year, you know, our country, I think, just loves when football is healthy. It's the fabric of our country, and hopefully we'll be able to get our stadiums back full so we can get some fun days going on the weekends in September, October, November, and December, and bowl season in the championship, getting fans in the stands.
Amen to that. Fitz, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you as always.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, guys. Have a great week. Go Cats. Bye-bye.
Go Cats is right. And, you know, David, the other reputation you have if you come out of Northwestern, number one, you're smart. Number two, you're going to break your rear end. You know, you talk to NFL scouts about different programs and what to expect out of them. Fitz does a remarkable job of recruiting guys that work hard and of teaching them what hard work is. It really pays off when you get to the NFL level.
Great point.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
What are you more proud of, the way you pitched tonight or the way you hit tonight?
I mean, got to go with the way I hit.
Have you ever done that before, 3 for 3 in a game?
Probably in high school, but I haven't seen live pitching since my senior year of high school.
that's hysterical. That's Dylan Cease of the White Sox. Fantastic performance yesterday, both at the plate and on the bump. And you know what's really funny, David, and I'll say it again because I think it really kind of blew my mind. His first hit was a chopper down the line, the third base line, and it's an infield single. Then he comes back, and he hits one over the head of the outfielder, hits the base of the wall. Couldn't get it over, but hey, he got a double, and that's kind of I guess it would be right center. And then the third time up, he goes into the hole between first and second. In other words, not only did he have a night at the plate, 3-for-3 after not facing live pitching in a game since his senior year of high school, he hit to three different parts of the field. Like it wasn't entirely flukish that he ended up with hits. It's just extraordinary that he could. I don't know if it was all luck, if he caught up with something or he couldn't catch up with something, but whatever happened, he looked like he was spraying all over the place.
Handled the bat quite well. Yeah, he did, for a guy who had not seen live pitching in 7 years. And then he makes history last night. First time since 1968, Catfish Hunter, a pitcher, does what he did and gives up he strikes out however many, 10 or more, gives up one or fewer hits, and has three hits at the plate. That by the end of the night, you're wondering if he can play center field. What a night for Dylan Cease. Molly, how does he get through the minor leagues, though? He played at Eugene. He played at South Bend. He played at Kannapolis. He played at Birmingham. He never took the bat and went to the plate as a hitter? I just think that's unbelievable, but apparently not.
Yeah, I have no idea. I have not studied his minor league career. I didn't know that was going to be part of the exam.
I know. Well, I'm curious. I'm Googling it breaks. I'm like, how is this possible?
Yeah, it is really peculiar. And it's fun. What's funny is, I forget who it was. It might have been it might have been Merck that was tweeting that he had a good, he was kind of trying to get some batting practice in, and he like apparently hit a couple home runs. He was like hitting the ball. It wasn't like he couldn't. He was a shortstop, I think, in high school as a pitcher. Yeah. But he was like just in. And when you read something like that, you don't think, oh, well, the guy's, oh, he can hit. You think like, oh, yeah, well, it's great to have, wouldn't we all be good at a batting cage? It's hysterical that he managed to do that after what was it, a 7-year break between live pitches?
Yes, hilarious. He graduated from high school in 2014, Milton, Georgia, and so you think it has been a long time. Sure, batting practice is one thing, but being able to do that in a major league game against a major league pitcher who, is no slouch. It's a great accomplishment, and yet the biggest achievement of the night was Dylan Cease back to back. Strong outings for the White Sox at the back end of the rotation, Mully. I do wonder this, psychologically, we've been waiting, and he knows we've been waiting for that consistency to kick in. Did Michael Kopech's emergence and the way that Michael Kopech handled that start when he was pressed into action, did it have any effect at all on Dylan Cease, just given the conversation that followed, like, okay, where does Kopech fit into this rotation?
Well, maybe psychologically, maybe, but I honestly think that we have been waiting for this. And the one thing you can say about Dylan Cease, it's not that he doesn't have it. It's not that he can't pitch. It's that we haven't seen it consistently. And so he's been kind of up and down to this point. We've seen like really good starts from him, and we've seen some pretty bad starts from him. And what we've seen in the last two is consistency. And, what is really... as he mentioned it, and I think we talked about it earlier, the thing that jumps out to you is that wasn't the Detroit Tigers, right? That was a team in Cincinnati that has some offense. So you go from having a good outing against Detroit, and maybe you think, wow, that's a great outing. That's one of the best outings of his career. Or maybe you think, Detroit doesn't have anything. And then you do it against Cincinnati, you follow it up. Then all of a sudden that validates the earlier start, and it makes you feel like the arrow is back on the upswing. You're pointed in the right direction. So just keep it up. Just keep it up. If you can get what you're getting out of Carlos Rodon,
oh my gosh.
You can get what you're getting out of Dylan Cease, that's like
That's like hitting the lottery on top of having the winning tickets with the three guys ahead of them, right? Because you feel like you have consistency at the top of the rotation, and all of a sudden maybe your best performances are coming at the bottom of it.
Especially if Lance Lynn comes back and gives you what he has given you, you're talking about now a rotation that you got to feel is one of the best in baseball if you're getting that from your 4 and 5 starters. Absolutely true. Because you know Giolito is going to be consistent. You know that Keuchel's going to be professional. We see him today. Yep. Lance Lynn, tremendous, and then Cease and Rodon. And Molly, to close the loop on Dylan Cease's offensive prowess, maxpreps.com is there for us, okay? So Dylan Cease's senior year at Milton, Georgia, he had played in 24 games. He had 72 at-bats. He hit .333 with 2 home runs, 23 runs batted in, and 4 doubles. So the guy could handle a bat. At least he could as an 18-year-old.
And look, you know, the best thing about it is we're sitting here talking about this and we're not talking about the horrible injuries that they're trying to manage their way through here. They're trying to get through a really difficult stretch. And as much as I'm fascinated to watch the game this morning, and I like that idea, brunch with the White Sox. I'm on board with that, especially with Blue Plate Special with the Cubs following it up, and that allows those of us that like to get an early to bed and early to rise going, that helps a little bit. But I love it, don't get me wrong. But for the White Sox, this isn't where the meat of the schedule is. This, you know, Dallas Keuchel performance against Cincinnati, let's hope and let's look forward to it. But then you got Kansas City, then you got the Twins. So that's where we're going to find out, you know, where the impact is with the missing the two guys in the outfield. That's where we're going to figure out if you can hold up and win the division and all the rest of it. So there are going to be 6 games there that you want to really kind of use as a almost watermark measuring stick, if you will, as to how quickly you need to get something done here.
But I feel like Ozzie's right. I feel like when you looked at this White Sox team at the beginning of the season, there were so many expectations based on the fact that this lineup looks so overwhelming and such a tremendous embarrassment of riches. You had so many. It was deep. It was talented.
Yep. Yep.
You take those two guys off and still you're not going to recover or be the same, but you still have a lot of reasons for optimism offensively, and you still are looking at a team with the best run differential in the American League. So pitching, bullpen, you got to shore up the defense, and I think you're going to hit well enough to win your division and beat those teams that right now the Royals are in front of you, the Twins are going to be behind you, but I think the Sox have every reason to believe they can stay in first place if they can do those things.
And I think that confidence is born out of what happened yesterday. I think that confidence is because they responded well to adversity, at least initially. I'll be curious to know if we're in here tomorrow and we're having the same conversation, if we're going over lists of names again. I'm going to be curious to know if at the end of next week we're going to be sitting here having the same conversation and you know, seashells and balloons and great summer ahead of us and 20 games ahead, or if we're going to have a different conversation about, yeah, okay, what do we have to give up to make a move somewhere and all the rest of it. So I think that, you know, there's a lot, maybe this is a stupid comment, but I wonder, you know, we talked about Gavin Sheets getting a home run. Did you see he started the game in right field?
Yeah, I did. So I noticed that.
That's interesting to me.
It is.
So he's starting in right field, and I wonder why, and he hits a home run. Blake Rutherford hit a home run himself in a different game, in a different
with
the Birmingham Barons.
Where's he play?
He is an outfielder. So
yes.
I think that I wonder, and I don't know this at all, but I just am curious, as you're a minor leaguer following the big league club and you see this happen and outfield injuries, do you immediately think, this is my opportunity, I got to and start playing better? Does the sense of urgency that we're talking about at the major league level, does that trickle down and get to guys that that maybe you didn't think it would?
The Simple Minds song comes to mind. Don't you forget about me. That's what a lot of minor leaguers are saying right now. Guys like Sheets and who else is down there? Rutherford, I don't know how Jake Berger would fit into the mix, Mully, but don't you think they have to be wondering if this is an opportunity for them to kind of, be promoted, get noticed, move up the ladder? It's not probably at the top of the list of alternatives or options, but, again, if they can get through this first initial phase, who knows what the Sox will consider.
You know who knows? Steve Stone, because he knows everything. We'll bring in Stoney next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Steve Stone, White Sox TV analyst.
Judging by my Twitter account, I am presiding over the Titanic. Let's say that there are dark times, however, good baseball teams, and I think the Sox are and were a good baseball team before this rash of really devastating injuries, I think they will find a way to stay competitive until things get a whole lot better injury-wise.
And the pitcher, a 12-game winner already this year, Steve Stone.
Former American League Cy Young Award winner.
Stone, remarkable story, this young man. A career apparently over, rotator cuff problem, rejected surgery. Went to a kinesiologist, muscular therapy, after knocking around the National League, the American League, back to the National League with the Cubs. Finally, free agentry, joining Baltimore after he'd lived up to his word with Bill Beck and the White Sox. And now here he is, all the way back.
3.5 decades plus of excellence in the booth. No one breaks baseball down like Stoney.
They've been trying to keep a lot of pitches away from Jose Abreu tonight. I'm thinking this is a really good matchup with him and Otero. Let's see if he gets careless with one.
In the air left field. Allen back in the warning track. It is gone! How good of a matchup!
Jose did indeed enjoy the offerings of Dan Otero.
Steve Stone with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a joy to talk to Steve Stone, brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Morning, Steve.
Just delightful.
Well, I got to tell you, so far so good. One game down. Just keep it going. Don't stop now. I don't know what to say.
I can tell you one of the things to say is what a remarkable starting rotation it's been to this point. And when you take a look at what Dylan Cease is doing now and realize that Carlos Rodon before him is throwing the best baseball of his life, Lance Lynn is back. Giolito has had a couple of difficulties later, but all in all throwing the ball pretty well. And Dallas Keuchel is going to get the game fairly deep each and every time. You look at the starting rotation, you have to think it's the equal of just about anybody in baseball. So teams with good pitching, good starting pitching especially, and the bullpen's going to get better. These teams hang around, and granted, a lot of injuries to the offense. The entire outfield out now with Adam Eaton taking a couple days off, and hopefully he'll come back 100%. But when that happens, you have to depend on other areas of your ball club. And well-balanced teams, and I think the Sox are going to fall into that category, they stay competitive. And they win the games they're supposed to win, and they outpitch a lot of teams, and that's what the Sox are doing so far.
Steve, Tony La Russa has been heavily scrutinized over the first month or so of this season. Losing Luis Robert after losing Eloy Jimenez, that's about 65 to 70 home runs potentially. How will their losses affect the way he manages this team, if it will at all?
Well, I think Tony, left to his own devices, wants to be an aggressive manager. I think he likes to put guys in motion. I think he likes to put the pressure on the other team's defense. And I think that sitting back and waiting for this team to consistently hit the ball out of the ballpark probably isn't the right thing at this point. And, you lose a couple of guys that were going to drive in a lot of runs for you. There's no doubt that Luis Robert was going to start hitting home runs because he was making solid contact. Eloy he was going to hit 40 this year. He's going to drive in 120. It was going to be a big year for him because he's one of the premier sluggers and run producers in the game. But no manager and no coaching staff will ever lament who is not here because they can't help you. And this is a game that you play every day. it's not like football where you have a week off and then hopefully your guys get healthy again before you can play the next week. This is a game that demands everyday attention, and every day you have to go out and create a winning scenario with what the opposition gives you. So if you're looking at timing between pitcher and catcher, and the usual time, this is getting a little bit in the weeds, but it's how you judge your running game. 3.3 seconds between the time a pitcher delivers the baseball and the time the catcher gets it to second base. For a pitcher, it's 1.3. For a catcher, it's 2.0. From the time the catcher catches the ball, it's 2 seconds till the time it hits the glove at second base. That's major league average. 1.3 is major league average for pitchers delivering the ball home from the time he starts his windup to the time the catcher catches the ball. And so anything under 3.3 seconds, you can't run. Anything over, you run a lot, and I believe that's what the Sox are going to do. They're going to take a look more now than ever before at trying to take advantage of speed. I think you saw last night, and I don't know how the lineup is going to look when Eaton gets back, but you saw last night a lineup that I particularly liked because Nick Madrigal behind Anderson. Nick is going to put the bat on the ball. You want to use a hit and run? That's great. I mean, years ago, you guys remember it. Many of the listeners don't. But when Lou Brock was with Hall of Fame career with St. Louis, and he would get on base to start the inning. And then Teddy Sizemore would do whatever he could because Brock would steal second, then Sizemore would get him to third. Now he's on third with one out. He inevitably scored in the first inning, and the Cardinals were up 1-0. And you can envision that kind of situation with Tim Anderson getting on and Nick Madrigal doing everything he can to either get him in or get him over. And that is a small ball approach to something that that this era doesn't demand. This era is a home run era, but the Sox are going to have to occasionally scale it down a bit, try to win some games with their speed. They got pretty good speed, even with Luis Robert out.
Yeah, Steve, Madrigal is in the two hole again today, so that's nice to see for the reasons you mentioned. And, it's just when you look at Andrew Vaughn in left field and Billy Hamilton in center field and Leury is in right field today, I go back to worrying about Andrew Vaughn without having Louis Robert there to clean up anything that might go awry. I mean, he's done very well thus far. But we talked about this idea where you only have to cover half of left field. Now he's a left fielder. Does that change the way you look at him in that position? Is that more about making sure his bat's in the lineup? How do you deal with it?
Well, first of all, I think you're underrating Billy Hamilton's defense.
Okay.
When you lose Luis Robert, you lose an offensive force. But when you substitute Billy Hamilton for Luis Robert, you don't lose very much defensively. Number one, Billy Hamilton is maybe a touch faster, certainly is fast. Number two, he's got a really strong and accurate arm. Number three, he covers an astonishing amount of ground. I'm not concerned at all defensively as far as center field is concerned. If Billy Hamilton is going to be the guy that plays there, he's going to do a great job. Now, you lose a little something with Leury Garcia out there. Not that Leury can't run fairly well, but he's just not he's not the defensive player that Billy Hamilton is or Luis Robert is. You know, very few are as good as Hamilton and Robert. So, yeah, defensively, that's not a big problem. And so far, and you guys notice because you guys watch every game or most every game, you haven't seen Vaughn overmatched in left field with anything.
Nope.
And so, I mean, that's a testament to his athleticism. This is a guy that was one of the dominant college players playing first base. We've seen him make one great play at first base that helped turn a game around. And obviously when he gets an opportunity to go there, he's going to give you a good, solid effort at first. I'm just amazed, and I am pleasantly surprised at how solid he's been in left field. Again, a testament to a guy who has a lot of athletic ability, because we tend to believe when you see a guy playing first base and he doesn't play anyplace else, that's he's there for a reason, because he doesn't have good mobility, he's not all that athletic. But that's not the case with Vaughn. So when you're looking at what he can do, I think he's going to hit the ball a whole lot better. But right now, will he make the great plays in left field? He's not going to be Alex Gordon in left field, but he's going to catch the ball with regularity.
Steve, what's clicked for Dylan Cease so that his last two times out he's not giving up a run?
He's not falling off the mound as much to the left side, and he's staying over his back foot, which is something that even when Ethan Katz wasn't here, I kept talking about with Dylan Cease last year. I mean, it was evident. He also has a new release point for his breaking ball, another thing that is a small mechanical tweak. But I think that that Ethan Katz has been the greatest ally of both Cease and Rodon. I think that he is he's wise beyond his years as a pitching coach. He's been around a long time coaching. But as a pitching coach, I think he can really relate to each and every one of these pitchers. And I know he spent a lot of time before he ever put that uniform on and went to the White Sox clubhouse in spring training, he spent a lot of time looking at video and breaking down each and every motion of these pitchers, what they needed to do, what they were doing wrong, what they were doing right. And it's not a one-size-fits-all pitching coach. Talking with Ethan about it, he said, look, I can't make Rodon Cease. I can't make them Giolito. I have to take what they do and make them the best at what they do. So he broke down all of the motions and then figured out where the mechanical difficulties were and then make suggestions to them. Hey, why don't you try this? Why don't you go with this? See if this works. Why don't you use this instead of that? And I think when you have the arm and the talent of both Rodon and Cease, you realize that if the mechanics are there, if you can repeat the motion, you're going to have control. There was no reason for Dylan Cease not to have control. And I'm not going to tell you he's going to have he's going to have Max Scherzer control. But he's going to get to the point where he can hit the spot with both his curveball and his slider. They were both excellent last night. Watching him thread the needle on the outside corner was a pleasure. He always had the capability of striking out a whole lot of guys. The problem was that he couldn't get ahead often enough to strike them out, and then he would have long at-bats, high pitch counts into the fifth inning. That's not the case anymore. I don't know how long it's going to last. I'm thinking that he's finally figured it out. It will come and go, but he's at the point now where he's just about ready to look like a top-quality major league starter most every time out.
Steve, enjoy your breakfast with the White Sox. I know I'm going to enjoy mine.
Thanks, well, Steve. Great stuff.
Going to be a dandy. Take care.
All right, buddy. That is Steve Stone. Always a joy to talk to him. Lot there. All right, we got Dan and Layla next. Mully and Haw on the score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly!